This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 26th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 283. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, Justin Trudeau's China crisis. The scandal continues. What does Chinese Communist Party interference mean to Canada's diverse Chinese communities? Human rights activists testified to House of Commons committees on the challenges that they face and the solutions that they propose. And my featured guest is Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Justin Trudeau's China crisis is now in its second month. Revelations from leaked reports by Canada's spy agency carried by the Globe and Mail and Global News have rocked the nation. Evidence of Communist China's meddling in the 2019 and 2021 federal elections and the 2022 Vancouver civic election. Trudeau asked former Governor General David Johnston and two National Security Committees to study the issue. Meanwhile, opposition MPs outvoted the Liberal minority government on March 23rd, calling for a public inquiry. That was the same day that Joe Biden arrived in Ottawa for his first visit as U.S. President. It was also the day after Don Valley North Liberal MP Han Dong quit caucus after a report that he had lobbied a Chinese diplomat to delay freeing hostages Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor.
Let me be clear. What has been reported is false, and I will defend myself against these absolutely untrue claims. But let me assure you, as a parliamentarian and as a person, I have never, and I will never, and would never advocate or support the violation of the basic human rights of any Canadian, of anyone, anywhere, period. The accusations are false. My family came to Canada for freedom.
Representatives of human rights groups across Canada have testified to House of Commons committees about the challenges they face and the solutions they propose to battle the Chinese Communist Party's reach into Canada. From the March 10th meeting of the Committee on Ethics and Access to Information, Chuck Kwan, co-chair of the Toronto Association for Democracy in China.
We therefore urge Canada to address China interference on these multiple fronts by taking a strong and principled stance in the issues highlighted in the CSIS reporting, establishing a national reporting hotline on harassment and intimidation, and set up a foreign agent registry similar to the one in Australia. While these actions may not completely eliminate the problem, at least they can act as deterrent and serve notice to foreign powers that their proxies that we guard our democratic institutions and our sovereignty seriously.
Mehmet Toti, co-founder of the World Uyghur Congress.
The communist regime in Beijing is not democratically elected regime. That regime is not accountable for its people. It acts like a criminal organization. For that regime, it is important to keep the Uyghurs and other people under their control, and for that reason, they take a hostage of our family members. I'm speaking on behalf of Uyghur Canadians, and just to control our life here in Canada. And even the democratic and free country in Canada we are living, and Uyghur Canadians are not free just because of the Chinese pressure and the Chinese threat by taking hostage of their family members. Basically, they don't want Uyghur Canadians to exercise their right to protest and exercise their right to speak about the atrocity crimes that Chinese Communist Party is committing. And that is the biggest threat for the Chinese government. And for that reason, it is regarded these kind of peaceful activities as part of national security. And for that reason, they apply all harsh measures to crack down.
Chuck Kwan.
Chinese consulates may not do it directly. They have their proxies as a wink-wink thing. They have business people arranging for buses and paying stipends, something like $20 or $50 a day, to bus in people either to nomination meetings or to do counter-protesting. And we have seen this in one of the fights at the Toronto District School Board, where they bus in international students from Waterloo, from Guelph, into Toronto to do this kind of thing. And this is something that I've seen firsthand, and this is something that I've been told firsthand by many other writings as well.
Bill Chu, spokesperson of the Chinese-Canadian Concern Group on the Chinese Communist Party's human rights violation.
But with PRC entering the world stage, his leaders have to struggle to maintain the validity of his problematic ideology and related wild claims in front of not just its people, but the world's. So within the secret warfare it's waging globally, it spent billions on buying or expanding media and propagandas, including getting full page ads and inserts in prominent Western papers. And by dismissing any criticism of CPP as baseless lies, or lately as quote-unquote anti-Chinese racism. To prepare for the latter, they have for decades intentionally mixed up the use of the terms CCP the party, China the state, and Chinese the people. The purpose are simply to silence criticisms against the CCP by equating that or as criticisms of all Chinese, and also to rouse up a distorted sense of nationalism among all Chinese, including the diaspora.
Cherry Wong, Executive Director of Alliance Canada Hong Kong.
Anti-Asian racism is growing in Canada, and threats of transnational state-sponsored violence has also intensified in recent years. The diaspora communities are excluded in the Canadian discourse while surviving Beijing's overreach in our communities. The notion that all ethnic Chinese communities are supporter of the Chinese authorities is racist and reductive. These communities are not a monolith, but are vibrant and diverse in language, culture, and politics. Our community members have long observed foreign interference activities under our noses, writing nomination forms handed out during consulate-affiliated demonstrations. Officials from the Overseas Chinese Affairs Office cozying up to elected officials. Ethnic reporters attending Beijing-backed conferences. Photo ops to wine and dine business and political elites.
Ayman Lau, advisor to Alliance Canada Hong Kong.
Beijing's transnational controls, dissidents' tires are slashed, activists are harassed and threatened, international students' study permits are declined, and passports applications are rejected. Overt criticism of Beijing or pointing out the PRC's influence operations could cost people career opportunities, business prospects, research funding, bar them from going to the PRC, and even jeopardize their personal safety and their extended family members. Is it any wonder that many self-censor due to Beijing's effective global system of control and surveillance?
From the March 20th meeting of the Committee on Canada and China Relations, Gloria Fung, president of Canada-Hong Kong Link.
Because of language barrier, majority of mainland Chinese Canadian get, you know, the information from WeChat or maybe the free community newspaper, or even some of the social media platforms such as YopBBS or QQ.ca, etc. And exactly because of this pattern, it gives the opportunity for CCP to manipulate and also spread the disinformation campaign very effectively. And this is something our government also need to pay attention to. Apart from, banning TikTok, how are we going to deal with WeChat? Because this becomes a main source and also, a machinery spreading disinformation campaign in Canada.
Henry Chan, co-director of Saskatchewan Stands with Hong Kong.
The different Chinese diaspora community, I think they do all have a sense that it is, if they're pro, like if they're against the government, essentially, that then there is a terror that they're going to be attacked by the regime somehow. And that paints, I think, a terror on people's mind that I dare not say this in public, or I dare not say this even on Canadian soil. And that is, I think, very problematic, that they're not even able to express their own views when they're out of the country to criticize the regime. And whenever they criticize the regime, they feel that there is a threat, probably never being able to return back to their country or their family being affected if they have family there still.
My featured guest on this edition of the podcast is Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University. Andy Yan is a Vancouver-born expert in urban planning, demographics, geography, and political science. You analyze demographics. Give us a bit of a taste of what the Chinese community in Vancouver and in Canada looks like in 2023.
This is very much the start of my academic and professional careers, was very much looking and sharing about what was in the Chinese Canadian community, because I like to think I am part of that, that vastly diverse community that has helped shape this country from the very start.
It's from that kind of initial academic and professional beginning. Really, my work is kind of not only kind of looking in the past, but then also looking at the present and the future. And a lot of my work these days is looking at demographics, and an area that I do look at are the demographics of Chinese Canadians. And I think that it's very much a tremendously diverse community that I think have a huge spectrum of experiences in the country, through which, currently today forms the second largest racialized minority group in the country, second to South Asians at 5% of the population in Canada, which are those who have claimed themselves as Chinese Canadians. And I think that's illustrative actually of a larger generational change in this country, whereby the population of Chinese Canadians increased by 67% in 20 years, that in one generation from 2001 to 2021, we saw sizable change and growth within the Chinese Canadian community, through which I think that we are now entering, I think, a phase of our country where I think it is one that I think it has this connection to Asia, to China, but then at the same time, I think it's on its own legs towards being in this country.
The foreign interference scandal has resulted in Han Dong's resignation from the Trudeau Liberal Caucus and Vincent Ku's resignation from the Ontario PC Caucus. Meanwhile, Trudeau-appointed Senator Yun Pao Wu, who represents BC, has accused reporters of stoking anti-Chinese McCarthyism. But at its root, this is a story not about race. It is a story about a foreign dictatorship, the Chinese Communist Party, spreading its influence in Canada, a parliamentary democracy.
Where is this going, and what is this meaning to people in the Chinese communities, the very diverse Chinese communities in Canada?
Well, I think it's the fact that we live in a transnational world, that Canada is connected by a flow of people and money from all over the world. And in this case, one of those parts of the world is China. And I think that it's really ensuring that we have our institutions ready for that future, for that present even, and that we, I think, understand the kind of politics and yet willingness to protect our democracy that is coming in play right now. I think that really when it comes to, I think, the working in this society that we have built over a number of generations is to ensure that we have the kind of institutions that deal with the kind of transnational influences that can occur in a society like ours, and it protects the freedom and the and the liberties that we enjoy. And I think that this is, I think, really underlying, I think, the questions I have, particularly in the current situation, when Senator Wu goes in and talks about how right now an inquiry into foreign influence is somehow equivalent towards the Chinese Exclusion Act. I find that incredibly disingenuous. I think that's completely disconnected with the past and very much connected with the present towards protecting the status quo, as opposed to using ideas and challenging racism to challenge the status quo. So I think that this is really, I think, an element through which we actually don't necessarily understand the country that we've built, much less the kind of need for institutions to modernize themselves to the threats to those who are members of this incredibly tremendously diverse country that foreign powers can have it today.
Tell the listeners about your family history of what your family overcame and how that's shaped you as a person, as an academic.
Mm-hmm. Well, my great-grandfather actually came here just before the Chinese Exclusion Act came into full power. He paid the head tax back in the 1920s. We've just actually discovered documentation which actually illustrates his presence in the 1920s in Vancouver, helping to formulate the first Chinese, the first Yan Fraternal Society. And you begin to understand really how Chinese communities in that early part of the 20th century had set up societies to find a level of protection, but then also connection that I think have really kind of helped inform myself as an academic, that it really, again, begins to really reinforce how people look and yearn for community and how much I think that community, I think, matters towards not only their personal well-being, but then generationally, that it has implications for their kids and their grandchildren, or in my case, their great-grandchildren. And I think that together we really talk about the tremendous, I think, society we've built, that I think we face tremendous, I think, challenges from the past, but yet at the same time, I think our present and our future, I think, offers an example to the rest of the world, as opposed to one that I think is constantly mired towards the kind of, I think, the politics of grievance that seems to be quite popular amongst certain parts of our leadership these days.
While foreign interference in Canadian elections is dominating the headlines, its evil twin could be called domestic political pandering. All parties do it, one way or another. In 2013, the Quick Wins outreach scandal exposed the secrets of the BC Liberal Party's strategy to market itself to ethnic communities. It even led to a criminal charge for misuse of public funds. It wasn't about diversity and inclusion, it was about votes and donations.
It's completely patronizing. It assumes that being Canadian is transactional, that we only are here together because of a series of transactions, as opposed to the kind of relational elements of forming a country, forming a nation, that I think that we are very, hopefully, we are one of the very few countries that are breaking away from being an ethnic state and really breaking into a multi-ethnic state, and one through which I think engages the differences that we have, but yet find this mutual connection towards towards building a bigger country through which can meet the challenges that are, I think, really coming quite quickly in terms of things like climate change, economic inequality, and I think meeting that challenge. But I think that really the kind of, I think, world, I think, through which I think has been posed by some of the responses towards how I think this is an attack on Chinese Canadians, I think really fails the fact that we need to really engage this issue of foreign interference, specifically for the protection of Chinese Canadians, for the protection of all Canadians, as we defend the institutions through which we treasure as Canadians.
A proposed remedy to foreign interference is a registry of foreign agents. Anyone from any other country that wants to change a Canadian law or gain a contract from the federal government would have to register.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to also add, there are functioning examples of these registries in Australia and the United States that this isn't an example. Again, I've talked about this in terms of real estate. This isn't an example of Canada leading, but this is where we're following really what other countries have done in attempts to protect their democracies. And I think that another element that I think is important to note about Canada is how we hold power accountable. That I think that we have this very unique system through which it doesn't matter who you are, because if you are in elected office, in power, you are made accountable. That it doesn't matter if you're the Prime Minister of Canada, you actually go in every day in question period and are absolutely peppered towards questions of your of how you govern. And I think that that's a unique part of who we are, because we hold power to account. And I think that this is something that I think there are attempts to show that no, that there, I think, certain actions, which is, I think, tremendously problematic, that it undermines the very democracy that our civilization is built within this country. This is really, I think, part of a larger challenge of being a multicultural state, of being, I think, a transnational, one that I think has a history of transnational movements in this country. But yet, I think that with changes in technology, changes of flows of people, and the intensification of people's flows and of people and money, that we need to make sure our institutions catch up to those changes. And that this is really, I think, a need to look at how our institutions protect minorities like Chinese Canadians, like so many others across this country, to keep our democracy transparent and accountable.
Andy Yan, the director of the City Program at Simon Fraser University, joining us as we continue to investigate foreign interference in Canadian elections and other aspects of Canadian life. Thanks again to Andy Yan for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
It's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, Chinese wolf warrior Chao Chan says Taiwan will be ours. Sydney Morning Herald publishes CCP op-ed about Taiwan. Chao cited the Cairo Declaration as stipulating that Taiwan should be returned to China. What he neglected to mention was that the declaration referred to the government of the Republic of China, which is now based in Taiwan. He wrote that Beijing's first choice is reunification by peaceful means. Yet, as the ROC was never united with the PRC, and Taiwan has never been ruled by the PRC, the term reunification is inaccurate. A poll conducted by the Lowy Institute in 2022 revealed that 63% of Australians believe China is more of a security threat to their country. In Kyoto news, Kishida nixed China envoy farewell meeting amid strained ties. Prime Minister Fumio Kishida declined to meet with former Chinese ambassador to Japan, Kang Xuanyu, before his departure in late February, multiple sources have confirmed. Several of Kong's predecessors met Japanese premiers to bid farewell, but Kishida broke the custom in light of worsening public sentiment amid China's vessels' repeated entry into waters near the Tokyo-controlled Senkaku Islands and the past flights of suspected Chinese spy balloons over Japan. In Hong Kong Free Press, fans rushed to snap up last Hong Kong football jerseys before China added to official name. Hong Kong played against Singapore at Mong Kok Stadium on Thursday in the first international friendly match after the city dropped most of its stringent COVID-19 restrictions, including the mask mandate. The match ended in a 1-1 draw. Hong Kong Football Association passed a resolution at its annual general meeting earlier this month to change the group's name to the Football Association of Hong Kong China. The city's sports bodies were told to include China in their name by July 1st this year, or risk losing their funding. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.
Anchor.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Gordon Moore, visionary Intel co-founder who brought the company to Oregon, dies at 94 at his home in Hawaii. Before helping launch Intel with colleague Robert Noyce in 1968, Moore had predicted that the number of transistors on an integrated circuit would double annually as technology advanced, a maxim that became Moore's law. Today, chipmakers want 1,000 acres for their new factories. Back then, factories were much smaller, and Intel only wanted 30 acres. Intel employs 22,000 people on that site. In Cairo News, two suspects wanted in connection to human trafficking ring that stretches across Washington. The suspects were identified as 60-year-old Lin Wei Yan and 43-year-old Yan Yang of Tacoma, according to the task force. Yan and Yang are facing charges of leading organized crime, promoting prostitution, and money laundering. Officials say human trafficking is a big issue across the state. In Czech News, annual walk to mark anniversary of Michael Donaghy's disappearance. Michael Donaghy was 4 years old when he disappeared on March 24, 1991, and his family continues to hold an annual walk to raise awareness of the ongoing search. In 2021, police released an age-enhanced sketch of what Michael might look like at age 34 to mark the 30th anniversary of his disappearance. Anyone with information about Michael's disappearance is asked to contact the Victoria Police Department's dedicated Michael Donaghy tip line. That phone number is 250-995-7444. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to
John Garrett, the former WHA and NHL goalie, will retire from color commentary on Canucks Sportsnet telecasts at the end of this season.
You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 26th, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 26th of March in 1915, the Vancouver Millionaires of the Pacific Coast Hockey Association won the Stanley Cup over the Ottawa Senators at Denman Arena in Vancouver? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews.
Until next week.